Good evening and welcome to Star Psychics Blog Talk Radio. That's stars with a Z because we're special. I'm Stars Cash and I will be your host for tonight, taking your calls and setting up the reading queue for the second half of our program. This evening we will have another great topic, so please relax and enjoy. After our topic discussion, we will be ready to take your one question mini reading live on the air or in the chat room. For now, on with the show. Hi, everybody. This is Natalie, also known as Stars Cast, and of course, that was a recording from when Maya Moon and I were on together. But of course, you know, in the beginning here, I always like to talk about my sites, my planet stars with a Z.com, my mysticlivingtoday.com, and of course, stars with a Z, psychics.com. Mystic Living Today just went up on the 1st, and it's another big issue, all kinds of good stuff in there from people all over the world. I have a man from India, somebody from China, the UK, I mean, somebody from Luxembourg. I mean, it's just spread out all over, and that's the nice part of what I can do is I can meet all these people and chat with them. Sometimes I talk with them on Skype, but it's really a lot of fun. Stars Psychics has got its specials going on, of course, so take advantage of that. So without further ado, I'm going to bring in my guest tonight, and you are going to love him. The reason being is because he is an astro-mythologist. So when you think about that, astro, think of astrology, mythology, myths, the ancients, all of that kind of good stuff. And his name is David Warner Matheson. Good evening, David. How are you tonight?
Hi, Natalie. I'm great. How are you? And thank you for having me
on. I'm great.
I hope you're doing well tonight.
My honor. You can hear in my voice. I mean, this is like right up my alley. Anyways, you have, I ask everybody this. Now, you've written tons of books, and we'll talk about your latest one, of course, and anything else that you want to talk about. But how did you get into all of this? I mean, were you interested in, I mean, I'm an astrologer, but were you interested in astrology or the sky? How did you get started in doing all of this?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because I was really not looking for this. I was not into astrology. I'm not really coming at this material from an astrology angle, but rather I've always been fascinated by mythology since I was a child, and I always loved going out and looking at the stars. When I was little, my dad would take me outside to look at the stars. We would go camping, and I had the books of H.A. Rey growing up, who's a famous children's author, along with his wife, Margaret Rey. They created the Curious George books, and you may wonder why, what does that have to do with the stars? Well, H.A. Rey also wrote a book called The Stars, A New Way to See Them, and the first edition of that came out in 1952, and it's still in print, The Stars, A New Way to See Them, and that's, I grew up looking at the stars using the H.A. Rey system of outlining the stars. So you mentioned, you know, just in a few seconds before we went on the air, we didn't get a chance to talk very much, but you mentioned that, you know, you are a Sagittarius, and well, the outline of Sagittarius, H.A. Rey was very frustrated with the way that different constellations are outlined because they don't always help you to find them in the night sky or even to remember the specific stars. We can get into that in a moment. So he proposed an outlining system, and I grew up with that outlining system. He even had a children's version of the book, which I also had, which is called Look at the Stars. So people can look up H.A. Rey. But so from a very young age, I loved looking at the stars. I used the H.A. Rey system, so I kind of grew up with it. I loved the mythology of the Dolaire mythology books that people may be familiar with, like the Greek myths, the Norse myths, the Odyssey. I was very into the Odyssey when I was, you know, even in like middle school. And later I majored in literature and I got a chance to go back. I went to the military academy at West Point. I got a chance to go back and teach in the English department at West Point and got to teach the Odyssey there at West Point, which was fantastic. But all this time, I still was not really aware of a connection between the stars and the myths. So when you say, how did you get into all this? My parents were going to Machu Picchu on a trip in around, I think, 2007, 2008 time frame. And so I wanted to get my mom a book that had to do with Machu Picchu. So I wanted to get something that was kind of, you know, really not just a surface treatment of Machu Picchu. And the book that I found was Heaven's Mirror by Graham Hancock and his wife, Santa. I don't know if, you know, maybe not all your listeners are familiar with Graham Hancock. And Heaven's Mirror is not the most famous of Graham Hancock's book, but it's a beautiful book with all these photographs by his very accomplished wife, Santa, does all these photographs for his various books, and they're marvelous. And I've met them both a couple of times. And so I got this book because it treats Machu Picchu and talks about how these ancient monuments around the world mirror the heavens. So that's why it's called Heaven's Mirror. And it talks in that book. So I was looking up, you know, all these different books. I said, boy, this is really interesting. I got that book for my mother, and it got me into checking out some of Graham Hancock's other writings. And through that, I learned about a book that was published in 1969 called Hamlet's Mill. So I'm just finishing up this quick explanation of how I got into all this.
No, take your time. You're fine.
Yeah, so Hamlet's Mill is not an easy read. It was written by two professors in 1969, kind of at the they were already very accomplished and, you know, pretty older professors, so they both passed away a long time ago. But they were talking about connections between the myths and the stars and the evidence of ancient wisdom encoded in the myths. And so Graham Hancock and many others have referred back to this book, Hamlet's Mill. It's a very seminal text that caused lots of excitement among some people, and a lot of other people put it down or reject it out of hand, because it talks about connections across cultures, even across the continents, you know, connections in mythology of cultures that aren't thought to have been connected at all. And so that really fascinated me, because I was fascinated by the stars already, and I was fascinated by the myths already. And so once I started reading somebody talking about a connection between these two, I just had to know more, and I became almost kind of like the person with the, you know, the shed out in the backyard with the string on one wall to another. Yeah. With you know,
yes,
the string going from this picture to that picture, and trying to figure out what is this connection between the myths and the stars. Because Hamlet's Mill kind of hints at it and shows here and there, you know, well, this myth may relate to this planet or this constellation, but they don't really lay it out in a really systematic way. They lay it out in a fascinating way that really shows that something is going on, but they don't systematically unpack it. So I really became fascinated by it. And the other aspect of the story, you asked if I was into astrology. I was actually into the Bible and taking the Bible very literally, which generally people who take the Bible literally are not fans of astrology. You may or may not be
True.
Aware of that.
I was just thinking so, that, absolutely. They kind of look at you like you're evil.
Well, yeah, I was not looking for the Bible to be based on the stars, but that's what here and there in Hamlet's Mill they will hint at. Well, you know, this story in the Bible is also based on this same system of celestial metaphor, and I was a little uncomfortable with that. I was fine with the Greek myths being based on the stars, but not necessarily the Bible being based on the stars, because I was taking it literally. But I knew the Bible very well, and so that contributed to this kind of obsession of, wait a minute, I've got to look into this. And the more I looked at the Bible stories, the more I realized that they are also based on the same system of celestial metaphor that's operating in the Greek myths, the Norse myths, the myths of ancient Egypt, the myths recorded of the Maya civilization of Central America, myths of ancient Japan, all around the world. They're based on celestial metaphor. So it's not something I was actually out looking for. I was actually happily believing that the Bible was literal, but the more I started to understand the system, the more I realized that it was based on the same system was operating in the Bible as well. So that's part of why I became so obsessed with it. And not,
obsessed,
you know,
with
not
it.
In a bad way.
I love
yeah.
it. No,
I
no.
To,
but you see, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, he started really young. I've interviewed a lot of authors, lots of them. And the one thing that really is in common is most of them get intrigued when they're young. I mean, like middle school, sometimes even younger than that. And they find something like you did that it's just, well, it's called what I call divine order. It's divine. This is something that was supposed to happen for you. I mean, that's how I believe. I mean, a lot of, you know, people say, oh, it's a coincidence. No, it's not. It's, you know, you have a path. And this got you on your path, and look what you did with it. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I have to tell the listeners, this man has, you started, it looks like your first one was in 2011. Is that correct?
That's right.
The Matheson Corollary.
That's right.
Yeah, and then that's you right. went on and you did 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You did your 7th book this year. Now,
yeah.
I struggle with a fairy tale I'm trying to write. And here I'm talking to somebody that's written all these books. But you see, you did a lot of factual. And, you know, thinking about the Bible, you know, I was raised a Catholic. So thinking about the Bible, that was their interpretation. And people have to understand that was that time. That was, you know, okay, Jesus walked the earth and he did this. But he was also a man, people. He wasn't this little angelic being walking around. I didn't know that until later on in life because I was raised a Catholic. I took all the sacraments, all that kind of stuff. So, but you see, that was their interpretation, and as it came to be more and more interpreted by other people, you can see how it really changed. But for you, look what you got yourself into. How wonderful. And you teach, and you went to West Point. And now your first book here, The Matheson Corollary, what was that about? I mean, that was your first book, so I imagine it wasn't as in-depth as your other ones as you went up in time, years down the road, but that was your first one. What made you write that one?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So that was after really getting interested in the connection between the myths and the stars, but at that point, so that the first book that as you mentioned came out in 2011, and of course I was writing it for a couple of years before I, you know, before I was ready for it to be published. But so that was between 2009 and 2011. I was talking about connections between the myths and the stars, but at that point I was still taking the Bible literally. So there's a real break between that book and all my following books. So I was talking in the Matheson Corollary, not just about myths and stars, I do talk about that connection, but also about the geological evidence around the world for some kind of catastrophe, such as a global flood, in particular a global flood. And like I said, I was taking the Bible literally. I do think that there is overwhelming evidence for catastrophic floods,
mm-hmm.
you know, catastrophism, and I'm very interested in geology as well as mythology, and that first book was talking about both geology and myths because I thought there might have been a connection between the catastrophe and the myths and also the tilt of the earth. So it gets into those sorts of subjects, but I just want to stress that at the time that I wrote that one, I was talking about connections between the myths and the stars, but still taking the Bible literally. And then in between 2011, when I published the Matheson Corollary, is a corollary to a geological theory put forth by another West Point graduate, Dr. Walt Brown, the hydroplate theory about catastrophic flooding. So it's a corollary to that, but it also brings in the myths. Well, between 2011 and 2014, which is when my next book, The Undying Stars, came out,
mm-hmm.
I was going through a major, major paradigm shift. That's where I was starting to realize, you know, the same system of connection between the myths and the stars is operating in the Bible as well, and it's operating in the story of Samson was one of the first places that I saw it, and also in the book of Revelation. Both of those examples are given in that 1969 book, Hamlet's Mill, that I talked about. And those, when I started to see that, then I said, that's pretty solid argument. I was still resistant to it at first, but it's kind of like a thread on a sweater. You know, if you pull it too long, you can pull the whole sweater.
Correct.
So if you tug those threads and you know enough about the stars, and I was starting to decipher this kind of code that the ancient myths are using, or there's it's really like a language. It's like you're starting to speak and learning another language. Anyway, in between 2011 and 2014, The Undying Stars, I realized the Bible is also based on the same system. So The Undying Stars is kind of my first book where I'm talking about the Bible is also based on the same system that you see operating in myths around the world. And after that, I started becoming more systematic about trying to lay out how this system works. And that's when I wrote Star Myths of the World, Volume 1 and Volume 2 and Volume 3 and Volume 4 after The Undying Stars. So there's a real break, or at least in my life, there was a paradigm shift.
Yeah, there was. I can see that.
The first and the second. Yeah.
Yep. There is.
So thanks for asking about that. Yeah. So
there are people out there that, and I always ask, you know, this, how did this come to be? I mean, you know, we're all people, okay? I like to think everybody has gifts and everybody, you know, is guided towards certain things. So I always ask, how did you start to do this? But you see, you started when you were very young, really. But it was all the divine or whatever you believe in that was putting you on your path. That's what I believe in. You know, like for me, I mean, I was an astrologer. I was seeking information because my parents died less than 5 months apart. So I was looking for reasons. I mean, and I didn't think I'd find a reason there. I just got interested, and I happened to get in touch with two pretty famous astrologers, very well known, and one of them took me under her wing. I don't know why. We started talking. She was an old lady. She did everything on the typewriter. Listen to this, David. She produced, if you have her books, which I have her books, it's like it's been done on a typewriter. An old, you know, hit this key, it wasn't an electric typewriter by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I learned from her, and then I learned from another lady because I started buying her books because, you know, I was absorbing everything. I didn't even, kind of like you, you're absorbing everything. You want to know everything. The only thing for me was that I was not as interested in, you've heard of trines and sextiles and squares.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I knew what they meant and all that. But I wanted to read for people, and I had to develop my own way to read so that they could understand. The novice who doesn't know, oh, square, oh, opposition. Opposition's not too hot, but it can be good. Because it's going to pull you in another direction and make, well, to me, it's going to make you look at something else in opposition to what you think is over here. So, you know, I figured out my own method. But these two ladies really guided me. And one taught me how to get answers to questions from astrology just by looking at a chart for the year. So like you, maybe not, I didn't go as far as you. I really don't read. I mean, I'll read, like, for some people, but I have my own deck of cards that I use. But I really don't. But like you continued on. Your thirst, what you just had this desire to continue because look at all you've written. Now, the first one was the ancient wisdom. Then in 2016 you did two books, correct? You did Star Myths of the Bible and the Myths of Ancient Greece, right? You did two of those, back-to-back.
That's right, yeah.
Were they back-to-back? Did you write them, you know, one right after the other, or what?
They were. It is. It's almost like it's just flowing out. So I think it's really interesting,
yep.
Some of the things that you've said a couple of times, you know, divine purpose, or at least it seems like
yep.
that for me.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that, I think it doesn't matter necessarily which words, which label we put on it, but I absolutely agree with you that there's and the myths talk about this. The reason I'm bringing it up is people might be saying, wait a minute, you know, what, why would the myths all be based on the stars? And we can get into that. But part of the, a big part of the message, I believe, is to help us to get back in touch with our essential self, or some myths,
right,
systems call the divine self or the higher self. And so
mm-hmm.
when you talk about something that really you were fascinated in, even maybe as a child, it may be part of who you essentially are, but sometimes, not sometimes, almost always, the world kind of has a way of shaping us into conformity with society, and there's a necessity of, we wouldn't be able to drive down the road if we didn't observe certain red lights and stop signs and giving right of way and taking turns and things like that. And those are all important, but the voice, that inner voice, can be, and often is, and the myths talk about this, suppressed by the persona that we build, this mask that we create in order to operate within society. Out of necessity, we create rules for ourselves and for ourselves, but those can separate us from who we really are. And really, when you talk about opposition, I just talked about how my discovery of the possibility that the Bible was based on the stars was quite an opposition idea to what I was believing. Now, looking back, I said, wow, I was taking the Bible literally for 20 years. Was that wasted time? Now I feel like the Bible is not literal. It's, in fact, we tend to invert the message, I would argue,
yep,
when we take it literally. But was that lost time, all that time that I was studying the Bible? I was studying it so, you know, I was so strict about it that on Sundays I would only read the Bible. I wouldn't watch Netflix. They didn't have Netflix back then, but I wouldn't watch movies. I wouldn't read, you know, a secular book. I would just read the Bible. But that wasn't lost or wasted.
No.
Even though today I would say that was opposition to what I believe now, but it made me. So then when I was looking in another direction, that actually, caused growth, that those two working together. Anyway, so I think that for a long time, I was not, I was in the Army. I was being an infantry officer running around in the mud and shooting machine guns and things like that. But the like you said, divine purpose, or that the thing that your essential self is, we don't always come back to it right away, or it doesn't always surface right away.
No, well, mine was later.
But
years.
Later, it all came together. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was later, and it was. But the trigger for me was the loss of my parents, and my best friend encouraged me. She said, "Oh, you can do this. You can do anything." And I said, "Well, how do you know I can do anything? I just know." I mean, she worked for Ford Motor Company, so she was in the offices,
mm-hmm.
and she would call me every day, David. She'd say, okay, what's going on with me today? And then it was so, I don't want to say archaic, but the charts then were squares. They weren't, you couldn't get it printed. You couldn't see it on a monitor. I mean, I was a geek then. I mean, I was into computers then, and so I found some software that I could use, and, so when I would do, her forecast ahead, I could do that really easily, and, you know, I guess maybe I hit on something. I said she was going to meet this man, and he was, well, she did. I mean, all you have to do, and people that are listening are going to say, yep, that's the key. You just have to, what I call, hit on them with something. And then they start to believe. They may have been a skeptical in the beginning, but as soon as you relate something to them, they understand. And that's how all my clients were that I had. I used to do a lot of them when I lived in Michigan. And so, but that was the trigger for me, was the loss of my parents and my friends. She said, well, you'll figure out why. I don't know, David, if I ever figured out why. All I know was I got this thirst for astrology. And sometimes, as you know, you meet people along the way that encourage you, and I did, And pretty soon, something inside of you says, well, go find out about it. Look at it. And then I had another friend who did astrology actually better than I did. And she left me all of her books. She moved away and she gave me she had a trunk full of books. And I said, well, what am I going to do with all these? She said, you're going to do a lot more with these than I ever could have dreamt of doing. She said, you are going to go so far. Well, I don't know that I ever went that far, David, but I certainly learned a lot. But I learned, and like you, you learn to apply it so that people can understand it. I mean, it's not, you know, like I said, the Bible, if you read the Bible, I mean, you can sit there and the way they talk, the way it was written, I mean, you kind of shake your head and say, oh, my God, yeah, this is like Hebrew to me. You know, it's like some other language. But it's people like yourself that bring it to the fore, that allow us to really understand. And look what it did for you. It got you on this quest, if you will, to do all of these books that, you know, I don't have any of them. I asked your publicist for, she said she didn't have any, but I will get them. And I'm telling you, the people, if you're interested in anything about, talk about words of wisdom, anything about the stars, STARS now, and I name my sites with a Z because I didn't want it to be STARS. It was too plain. Can you imagine that? But it's basically, and that's my name online is Stars Cast. And I didn't want it to be STARSCAST or Planet STARS. I sat down and I wrote down and I was guided. And that's where it came from. And I've had this for 20, my magazine is 20 years old and my other site's 21 years old. So you know, this was sent to me, all of this. This was, okay, let's give her this information. She's going to do it. And that's how I believe it's divine. It's a divine order. It's an orderly fashion of things that the divine or whatever you believe in sets in motion for you. Look at what you did, David. And I'm sure you've got another book in your head. I bet you any money. You do.
Yeah, I'm always,
because I know.
Working on
I can hear it in your voice. And your knowledge and your thirst continues for the knowledge. And you're still learning. We're all still learning.
I appreciate your encouragement, and I think it's a great story about your friend who really encouraged you. The first one who was at Ford, and then the second one also.
Really, you can do this. She's not the first one in my life that's ever said that. Oh, Natalie, you can do anything. No, I can't swim and I can't skate. I can't. But if I had to do something, and this is from within, David, if I had to do something and it was something that if I thought about it, I probably wouldn't do it, but I would do it. If it was a necessity, like, for example, to save people, I could do it. There's just no doubt in my mind. You know, and you were encouraged. Look at what you started doing. I mean, I'm fascinated by it because you've written so much, and you have on your site, I believe you also have a blog, correct? Correct me if I'm wrong. You have
a blog. No, you're right. So there's a blog, and you can actually, you know, you can see inside of your
There's a video?
There's lots of videos, yeah. So there's a video section with dozens of videos. There's a blog, which actually is getting close to 1,200 entries on the blog that's on there. And the book section shows all the books, and you can – I just want to mention that if you click on the cover picture, then you'll get some look inside the book, kind of sample content. Of course, you get that on Amazon as well. That might be different pages that they show you, but you can see, you know, kind of some of what I'm talking about there at the website. But
oh yeah, but, you have these pages that move, they rotate, you know, they change, and it's got everything, and the colors, and amazing. I mean, I love this kind of stuff. I think I love it because I love astrology. And, you know, I have my gal who does my content. She's an astrologer. She knows the trines and the sextiles. And all. I don't bother with that. To me, that's just that's just too much for people to understand. I just like to say to them, and every time I ever did a reading for anybody, it was very positive. And the people that work for me on my site, you never paint doom and gloom. You never do that, never. There is always something good that's going to come from whatever. And so I handpick them. I make sure that they, you know, because just like anybody else telling or teaching, oh, you're never going to get this. You're just never going to get this. You're not smart enough. No, don't tell me that. Don't tell me that. Now, you know, one time I will say this, that, and this is a test to you, keeping on going with what you're doing. Somebody said to me, oh, you're going to fail. Well, I wrote this person. I said, don't ever tell me I'm going to fail. Ever. I never give up. I don't know what that trait is. I don't know where it came from. Because I'll find, and there's a lady listening right now, and she's probably laughing and nodding her head. I will find a way. I will find a way.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but now this one, oh, this one, the Undying Stars, that's a nebula, right? Is that a nebula that you've got there?
Yeah, that's the Crab Nebula. On the, in fact, there's
oh,
nebula.
Oh, I love nebulas.
People need to go to NASA and look at the nebulas.
They are amazing,
yeah,
aren't they?
Most of the covers have them. But let me say something about what you were just saying about the, you know, the ancient. So the ancient myths actually talk a lot about, and not just the Bible, but the Bible certainly talks about it in both the Old Testament, so-called, and the New Testament, so-called, talks about this concept of blessing versus cursing. And I think it really fits in with what you were just saying. But, and this is found in other, you know, I believe that all the myths around the world can be shown to have a common foundation. It's not just an opinion. I can show that they're operating on the same basis. And we can talk about some of that evidence in a second. But one of the messages that they do have in common is this message of blessing rather than cursing. You find that in Native American stories as well. You find it in the Bible. You find it in the Vedas of ancient India. And what you said about, you know, not painting gloom and doom or telling someone you can't, the definition, one of the definitions that I've kind of, you know, thought about, well, what is blessing and what is cursing? Blessing is obviously lifting up the, lifting ourselves and others up towards that higher self or divine self, or you know,
that's right.
To accomplish what we're, you know, as you said, we have an inner essential self that's trying, that's been given these gifts. So helping people to achieve that and fulfill that is blessing. And the opposite is putting someone down, cursing, is trying to reduce someone to just the physical or just the, you know, to deny the divine spark in somebody. And if you think of curse words and actually like swearing, it almost always has to do with just the physical body, trying to reduce someone to just a body or you know, an outward characteristic and deny that divine spark. And the myths talk about blessing, not cursing. It's a pattern that's actually dramatized in certain myths. Like there's a story of Balaam and the talking donkey. It used to be called, usually was called Balaam and the ass. It's in the book of Judges where Balaam is riding a donkey and he sees an angel. Well, he doesn't see it. The donkey does. And the donkey stops and Balaam's saying, why aren't you going? And starts beating the donkey. And finally the donkey turns around and says to him, hey, stop beating me. You know, she sees the angel and Balaam doesn't. Why are you beating me? And then the angel reveals its presence to Balaam and says, you know, you should stop beating the donkey, because if she had kept going, I would have cut off your head. I'm standing here with a drawn sword. And the donkey actually twists Balaam's foot against the wall. And that's when he really started to lose his temper. Well, that whole story can be shown to be based on the stars. I talk about it in one of my blog posts I could explain to you how it's based on specific constellations, but also that whole story is actually about perceiving the fact that there's more out there than just the physical, right? The donkey perceived the presence of the supernatural. Balaam didn't. And actually, in that story, Balaam is hired by a king to curse his enemies, and Balaam instead keeps going up and blessing instead. So the whole story actually dramatizes blessing versus cursing, and it talks about seven lighting seven fires, which is almost certainly talking about the Pleiades. You know, the Pleiades
right.
is a brilliant
yep.
star cluster that's sometimes called the Seven Sisters, or
right.
you know, it has mythological importance around the world. But the whole story actually involves constellations that are in the vicinity of the Pleiades, specifically the constellation Perseus and the constellation Taurus, which, of course, Taurus is a zodiac constellation. Perseus isn't. But as I try to explain the myths to people, even people who are familiar with astrology may know the characteristics of Taurus. Oh, well, a person who's a Taurus, they typically have these kind of features versus a Sagittarius or a Cancer or
mm-hmm.
a Aquarius.
Yeah.
But sketching out the outline of the constellation is difficult. We never really get taught, hey, can you... You know, if I gave a piece of paper to somebody and said, can you please sketch out the stars of Sagittarius? Very few people could sketch out the position of the stars of Sagittarius. And that's what makes what I'm talking about so difficult for people to envision, because if you can't envision the constellation Perseus, you wouldn't know that the constellation Perseus, the way the stars are actually arranged, the foot looks twisted on the constellation Perseus. And you can look this up in the outlines of H.A. Ray. And so when Balaam is riding on the donkey, his foot gets twisted. He gets rammed up against the wall because the donkey doesn't want to keep going and run into the angel. The angel is a different constellation, actually Andromeda. And you can see this in a blog post. If you just search, my blog is fully searchable. You can search for the, you know, Balaam. And find my explanation of this with some star charts. But the outline of Perseus has a twisted foot. Well, it turns out in many myths we have characters who have a twisted foot. In ancient Greek myth, there is the god of Hephaestus, or Hephaestus, who was the god of the forge. His name in Latin was Vulcan, which, from which we get volcano. You know, he's hammering away at the making swords or making armor, making helmets at a forge, you know, with a giant anvil
right, yep.
and hammering a red hot piece of iron or whatever. So
right.
Hephaestus is thrown out of the sky by his, in some versions of the myth, his mother Hera throws him out of the sky. Some versions it's Zeus, but ever after that, he has a twisted foot. He's because he fell all the way from Olympus down to Earth. So whenever you see a figure with a twisted foot, it may relate to Perseus. Not necessarily. You have to look for other clues. But that pattern, this is why we see these patterns in myths around the world, is because there are certain constellations that have certain characteristics, and those characteristics show up in myths, whether it's a Greek myth or a Norse myth or even a myth from Japan or Australia or the Americas. And that's really hard for, you know, the academic paradigm does not have a way for explaining how all the myths around the world should be using this same system. But the evidence is really, that's why I've written so many pages in these books, or, you know, they're actually quite lengthy, because I'm trying to show the evidence to show the connection to these myths.
And like for me, for the Sagittarius is the horse with the man with the bow and the arrow.
Mm-hmm.
When I see it in my head, I see it like it's in the sky. Isn't that funny? You know, the glyph for it is an arrow. I mean, that's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that's
it's
right.
With, you know what I'm saying? Well, if people would start to learn what it is in the sky, they'd have maybe a little different take. But I see it black, and I see it etched in white, and there he is, and there I am. Look out. And
yeah,
it's really funny.
It's an important constellation in the myths as well. And that's interesting how you envision it in your mind. And actually, the constellation Sagittarius, so one thing that it's hard to just describe, you know, for people who are listening, like you mentioned on my website, which is the website is Star Myths of the World, and the address is just starmythworld.com. But there are videos, lots of videos that you can click on, and some of them show these outlining systems for Sagittarius. And you can also search the blog and just search for the word Sagittarius.
I will
find
look.
Lots
you
of,
bet that.
Lots of
oh,
stuff.
Wow. Yeah.
And,
I
but
love
what's
that
really
stuff.
Interesting, too, yeah, and you know, Sagittarius is a fascinating constellation because it can be envisioned as a horse, as you said. It's often envisioned as a centaur, and I show that in some of my videos as to which stars you kind of have to connect to turn it into a centaur. But Sagittarius also often plays a role. In fact, all the constellations, they will play both male and female characters in different myths. So Sagittarius plays various gods. Sagittarius also plays various goddesses. Sagittarius plays many beautiful, you know, maidens in different, like in the Odyssey. So Sagittarius is an extremely important constellation also because you probably are familiar with the fact that Sagittarius and Scorpio, which is right next to Sagittarius, of course. You know, in the zodiac progression, they're you know, one after another.
I pick up some of that. You know, the degrees are important with astrology, and I'm only two. I have traced like the Scorpio, but people say, yeah, but you can talk like a Sagittarius. Well, that's true. I always say, I will say the things only you think about. You won't say them. That's what a Sag will do. You know, like David's thinking of something. Oh, who do you want me to? I'll tell him that. I have no problem with that. Just like, and I'm probably in the work I'm supposed to be in because I told you in the beginning, I can talk the whole hour myself if I really had to. And it's because I love it. I love it. And I'm learning so much from you. Some things I had an inkling of, but not as in-depth as what you're saying now. Now I'm drawn to this kind of stuff. This is just amazing. And I'm just seeing the nebula again because I love that color. And I want everybody to go to your site and thoroughly, I mean, you have so much on there that is free, that is available. They're learning tools. I mean, it's, you know, yes, you want them to buy your books, of course. But to me, you're very giving. To me, you're offering. There is no excuse that people cannot learn about your books, what's in the beginning of your books. I know you have stuff about each one and your blog and the myths. You even talk about that. I mean, I'm clicking on all these things as we're talking, and I'm fascinated. Some of us will never see some of these things. They're like they're images. They're like some made out of – most of them are made out of stone and etched, you know. You go look, and you'll see all of this, and we are so lucky that you have presented all of this because there's a story with each one of them. I can tell you that right now. I could tell you a story about each one of them. And it's just fascinating. I just love what you've done. And, you know, it's really funny because when I knew you were, I was going to interview and I have to share this with the listeners, I thought to myself, what am I going to talk to him about? And then I'm sitting here thinking to myself, oh, come on, Natalie, you know. You're going to bring in astrology because, and he's going to understand that really well. And look at how we've talked. We've done nothing but talk. And but that's, I told you, that's the beauty of having something like this, that it's, you know, if you can relate, to the person. That's why I have a content sheet on you, but I really have it, and there's questions, but I really don't look at it. I like to just talk to the person, and you have written so much, David. I am so impressed with you. I really, really am. And it would be right in line with me.
I
have a fairy tale in my head. Actually, part of it's been written and was read to an English teacher. My granddaughter took it to school in ninth grade. She's in 10th grade now. She read it to the teacher, and the teacher said, I want you to read this to the class. And she said, what? Read it to the class. And she put a little bit of her own ending in it because it's a love story. And, you know, she didn't want to get to, you know, ninth grade. You don't want to think about that kind of stuff. So she added, and the class, they applauded her. That made me feel so good. And she said, Graham, she calls me Grambo because I'm tough, like Rambo. She said to me, Graham, you need to finish this. You need to do this. And but then I look at everything that you've written, and it takes years, I know. I mean, it took you a long time to do all of this. But the thing of it is that you did back-to-back books, the volume 2 and volume 3, and then you took 2 years to release the next one in 2018. Now, the two that you did back-to-back, did you really write them back-to-back?
Yes.
Or were they released in 2016?
No, they were. I wrote. Obviously, the first one came out in February of 2016. That's Star Myths of the World, Volume 2, that you're referring to there. That's Greek mythology or myths of ancient Greece. So,
right.
So I'm just focusing on the Greek myths in that one, and then that came out in about February of 2016. So obviously, I was writing that. I was going to say, you know, in 2015,
it was released then.
1st,
or,
you know,
yeah, it was published and put out. Yeah. Okay,
then,
so now you've got one that you did
then,
this year, but what's next? I know there's another one in your head.
Sure.
Or you're already
writing
it.
I'm always writing something, Natalie. Yeah, I'm always writing something. And it's a great story. I'm glad you shared about your granddaughter, because I think I just want to make sure that kind of people understand that these ancient myths, these stories are actually, stories speak very powerfully to us, right? That's why, you know, a fairy tale we can remember a fairy tale from childhood that's still, and we say, oh, that's just like that. And I believe that what these myths are doing is they're actually talking about our own lives and our own trials that we go through. Like you said, when you really got into astrology, you were looking for answers about this grief that you'd suffered and the loss of your parents. And we all experience these different, this path in this incarnate life that we're all going through. And these ancient myths are given, I believe they were given to all the different cultures as a way of helping us, of blessing. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about the definition of blessing, of lifting us up towards, you know, reaching that potential that we're supposed to be doing, and connecting with our higher self, is actually a very practical concept. It has to do with that the suppression of our higher self actually causes, or our essential self actually causes, all kinds of problems. I recently have become very intrigued by the writings of psychologists that and healers and doctors that I had never actually read their work or encountered their work before I got into all this, who are talking about how the suppression of the essential self can lead to addiction and anxiety and depression, and even works its way out in physical ailment, because anxiety, you know, when our mind is anxious – you know, there is a mind-body connection. There are hormones that get released, you know, the fight or flight hormones that we have that are there to help us. If we're being chased by a bear, we want that extra adrenaline to be able to have extra speed or extra stamina. Those are all good connections that if our mind is scared, we get adrenaline so we can run away or fight or whatever. But if we're constantly in a state of anxiety, then our body will actually start producing different hormones and chemicals that are useful in certain situations, but we certainly don't want them going, you know, nonstop for years on end, because they can have very detrimental effects. So the recovery of our connection to our essential self is actually in these myths. They're not talking about someone else. They're talking about each and every one of us. So when you're looking for answers, I believe that these ancient myths that are given to all the different, you know, cultures around the world in ancient times were given to help us for these different situations that we face. And by starting to understand kind of the code or the language that they're speaking, just like when you start to understand, well, Sagittarius has these characteristics and Scorpio has these characteristics and Virgo and Libra, and the wisdom is encoded using constellations and actually using the heavenly cycles, one of which is that annual cycle, and also the lunar cycle that, you know about the moon moving through signs as well. Then we have a daily cycle, and we know that these cycles impact us, right? Here we are talking together right now, you and me, Natalie, on December 4th. So it is getting close to winter solstice. It's getting very dark, early. You know, you mentioned that you spent some time in Michigan. My mother's side of the family is from Michigan. And as soon as you said Ford, I perked right up, because my mom grew up in Ann Arbor and went to University of Michigan. Yeah. Well, it gets very, very cold and dark. You know, the farther north we go, the sooner it gets dark in the winter. Well, those cycles impact us, obviously, and the daily cycle impacts us. You know, try and do something at 3 a.m. Your brain has a totally different feel than at 3 p.m. And same thing with the cycle throughout the year. You know, we celebrate holidays probably or in the winter solstice. Well, there's lots of reasons, because it's connected to these ancient myths. But also, you want to take some time off of working. It's just not the same working until 7 p.m. in the middle of the winter as it is in the middle of the summer. I can, you know, be out in the fields, let's say, plowing until 7 p.m. and it's still light for two more hours.
Right. I'm in South Carolina. Where are you located?
I'm in California. I grew up in California, but I've been
all right.
over the country.
I'm in South Carolina, so we don't. Uh-huh. You know, I think I lived a long time in Michigan. But I only went back there once, and my best friend passed away. That's the reason I went back. But anyways, I have no desire to go back. My goddaughter is there. Her daughter is there, and she comes and visits me. I have no – winter up there is awful. It's dark and gloomy, and you just pray to see blue sky once in a while. I mean, once – because you're surrounded by the lakes, that's why. And once the system moves in, it stays there forever. I always say it stays forever. It doesn't, but to me, it always did. Now, down here, oh, my gosh, Carolina mornings are wonderful. Are you in Southern California?
Oh, I'm right in the middle, what they call the Central Coast. So I'm on the coast, about halfway between San Francisco and L.A.
Okay, well,
but what I was gonna
say here,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Carolina mornings are beautiful come spring. I mean, I was saying to my friend yesterday, God, I can't wait for spring. I guess I have to think about March, because in March, believe it or not, it starts, we have flowers blooming and everything. In Michigan, you're lucky if you see, I mean, summer is like 2 weeks there. I mean, it's horrible. And I lived there all my life. But I just, Yeah, if you know, the seasons affect you, the length of the day affects you, and even whatever astrological sign you are depends upon how you deal with things. And it's amazing. But what's amazing talking to you is about the constellations and the myths that all correlate, and I never thought of it that way. I mean, I knew once I talked to you I would probably start thinking in that direction and figure it out. But, now you have another book in your head. I want to ask you that before our time is up. Do you have another one that you're working on? You have
well,
to.
So, yeah, I'm always,
I'm giving you an order. No.
Like I said, I'm always writing, and I'm always writing on blog posts and making videos, too, of different things that I'm thinking about. It's kind of like my workout place where I work out the concepts that will later go into the books that I'm writing. But what I was going to say before we left the topic of the kind of the cycles of the year and, oh, you know, maybe the winter is dark and gloomy, those patterns, what I believe these myths are doing with the connection to the constellations they're invoking these cycles, not just to talk about the year and we go through winter and then we go through spring and summer, but to relate those, they form a kind of a language that teaches us things about our life. The cycle is related to actually, you know, the upper half of the zodiac and the lower half of the zodiac are imbued with significance in this ancient system, such that, you know, the equinoxes is where we have the night and day become equal, but in the, when it crosses over from being longer days to shorter days than nights. So the lower half of the year, what I'm calling the lower half of the year, is when the hours of darkness are longer than the hours of daylight, but the upper half of the year is when hours of daylight are longer than hours of darkness. So these ancient myths characterize our pathway through this life, through this world, as crossing through actually the lower part of the cycle, because we're in a body, we're in the realm of physical, as opposed to the higher realms of spirit. But they explain to us that there are connections that are beyond physical. You know, when you talk about getting information from the divine realm or from the other realm or listening to the gods or the message of the stars, we know these are things that connect us to one another and connect us to the cycles of the universe and connect us to nature. And so I strongly believe that one of the things that these myths are explaining and showing is our connection to one another, to nature, to the cycles, you know, that we were just talking about, and to the invisible realm. And that should connect us all to each other and instead of dividing us. And when we get divided from nature, we have problems. And we see lots of problems in society, you know, that come from being divided from one another and from nature. And so the understanding what they're saying and how they use this metaphor of the invisible realm, we can't see the invisible realm physically with our eyes, but the myths show us truths about it. They dramatize the truths that we need to learn about listening to our higher self or connecting with our higher self using the system of celestial metaphor. That's one of the things that I believe that they're doing.
Well, I agree, all my books
are really on that topic. So that's where I'm always going with my writing.
I think that anybody could take any one of your books, feel comfortable and at home, you know what I'm saying, comfortable reading it, and they would understand. because I'm listening to you, and all it seems like all of your books are connected. And so, in other words, they don't have to read the first one to understand. They can go to the center of all your books, the middle of them. They can read the last one, and they're going to get a lot out of it. I just know it because I'm listening to you, and I'm getting my own impressions. And you are such a believer, first of all. You, with everything you have, you believe in all of this. And, you know, every once in a while I can still see that black sky with that horse and with that, you know, the archer with the glyph of the Sagittarius. I can still see that in my head. And what sign are you, David?
Well, I was going to ask what you think I am. So I was going to say a little bit earlier, I'm Cancer. So the
Well, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know, sometimes you're what's called on the cusp. So you pick up, like me, you pick up the sign before. And a Cancer is very nurturing. A Cancer just cares, period. That's like my granddaughter. They care.
Mm.
The only thing, and I don't know if this applies to you, and I'm just giving you a little bit of a read on it, is that the Cancer can sometimes go and hide. They can, and maybe as when you were really, really young, you did this, you kind of pulled yourself in, and sometimes they can get really hurt. But I have this feeling, because of your intelligence, I don't want to say you talk yourself out of it, you're so focused on what you do that it's almost not allowed to go and brood. They will brood. They will get, somebody will say something, and they go and hide. I'm hiding. That. What are you doing? Well, I'm under my rock because I don't want anybody to talk to me now because I'm upset. But I have this feeling with you because of your experiences and being, you know, in the service and all of that, that you have not allowed that to happen. Maybe sometimes, you know, we all have days where it's not perfect. I had a man on last week, and we were laughing about that. He says, my days are not always perfect, you know, and he's a motivational speaker. But anyways, you know, I think that's you, but you're very caring. And I can tell by your books and I can tell by the covers that you are. And that's a great compliment coming from me.
Well, I was going to say, I really appreciate that, Natalie, and thank you for saying so. And I would say probably.
Now, are you on the cusp? Are you in the middle of Cancer or where are you? Where are you?
Well, I'm not an expert on all these probably closer to Gemini than Leo. Yeah, July 3rd.
Oh, okay. Yeah, okay. Well, you probably have the traits of a Gemini, and they're great writers. My best friend was a Gemini. You see what I'm saying? And people that are listening out there and looking at all the everything in the sky and all of that, you are a combination in astrology to me. You are not just, I'm not a solid Sagittarius. Oh, no, I'm not. Mm-mm, I'm not. I have a Leo moon. Oh, yes, I do. And my ascendant is Capricorn. I never give up. That's what I said. I never give up. I will not fail. I'm like the goat climbing up the mountain. Uh-uh. I'm not going to fall. No. And that, you know, so we're a blend of everything. But maybe that gives you your writing ability, your writing skills, your thinking skills. And that probably helped when you were even younger. That's why you never found yourself brooding about something or feeling. But you like to take care of, I can tell you that. I can hear it in your voice. You're a softie.
Well, thanks for that, Natalie.
And that's really a nice trait for a man to have, I think, that, you know, you're not. And I don't detect a big ego with you either. You're just too sensitive for that. I bet you're a great teacher.
Well, thanks. I do like to teach, and you know, like I said, I make these videos, and I do kind of feel compelled to try and share what I've learned if it's helpful to people. You know, I'm not trying to step on what people believe and change people who aren't trying to change. But for people who are looking for this, then I think it can be very helpful. Like I was looking for this, obviously. And when I became really obsessed with learning more about it. And now I'm trying to share. And, of course, I'm still learning. So you know, there's the gifts that are, you know, the ancient myths clearly describe the gifts that are given to men and women as coming from the divine realm or coming from the gods. We see that in the Greek myths, where there will be myths where someone has a great gift of beauty or of weaving or some other capability. And if they, and there's often these cautionary myths where, you know, the tale of Arachne, who is such a wonderful weaver, but she tried to say that she was better at weaving than the goddess Athena. Well, the reason that's so wrong, and it turns out badly for her, is because the gift itself comes from, Athena is the goddess of weaving. So she gives that gift to, you know, these gifts come from, the gifts that are given out come from the divine realm, or come from the invisible realm, or come from the realm of the gods, or the divine realm, or from God, if you want to say from God. But that principle is very important in the myth, such that you can't invert the order and say, you know, when Arachne says she's a better weaver than Athena, she's punished horribly. Or when the townspeople praise Psyche, this beautiful woman Psyche in the story of Eros and Psyche, and say, oh, she's more beautiful than the goddess Venus herself or the goddess Aphrodite herself, that causes wrath, you know, and problems. So the gifts come from the divine realm, and you know, when you're saying, well, you know, a Cancer has this characteristic, it's expressing that the source is, you know, this, we're part of something that's bigger, and we're tied into this bigger fabric, and so I don't know exactly where I was going with all of that, but the acknowledgement that these gifts come from the divine realm and are given to all people. You said right at the beginning of the our talk together, you said, I believe these gifts, you know, that everybody has gifts. And,
yep,
and I totally agree with you. That's a wonderful sentiment. And these gifts are given out to everybody. It's not just for certain people to try and achieve. Everybody should be, I think we should be trying to help everybody reach their full potential and their, you know, their purpose, that they're, as much as we can, trying to lift others up. That's what I think one of these big messages in the myths is all about, blessing, not
well,
cursing,
they're
lifting,
beautiful books,
lifting one another up.
And you just sound like a great man, and you're a great teacher. I just know it. I could sit and listen to you teaching. I mean, it would be easy. And I bet you anybody would really love to listen to you in a classroom setting. And I know you're teaching, and I know you're going to keep writing. And I want to tell you that I'd love to have you back on the show again, maybe when you complete your next book or your next series of writings or whatever, because I just know, and see how easy it was to talk to you. It's already after 9 o'clock, although we have time.
Hmm.
I just knew that once we started talking, it would just go. I mean, I didn't even have to look at my conscience sheet at all. I don't have to. I really don't have to. And I believe, and this is something for the listeners and for you, that all of these authors that come to me, like yourself, it's all divine order. I just know that there is a higher up. Okay, Natalie's got to talk to this person. This is going to be important. It's going to be important for her and the person that she's talking with. And I don't even like to call it an interview, because really it's a talk.
It's a conversation.
I don't sit and ask
absolutely.
Questions. Yeah, and everybody I've ever interviewed, most of the times the authors will write to me, well, what is this? Is this going to be a Q&A? No, it's not a Q&A. We'll just talk, and they'll learn about you, and it's informal, and we'll laugh, and we'll learn things, and we do, and I so appreciate you on the show. You're going to love how I end all of my shows, and so I'm going to keep you on a minute. Don't hang up. With that, I want to thank you, David, so much for coming on. Please go to his site now and look at his books. There's so much there to read. It's STARMY thworld.com, starmythworld.com. Go to it. Click. You'll get a little preview when you click on all of his books. And there's a blog, and he has videos, and he told me he has lots of them, and I haven't even ventured in that area yet. And then you're going to see one of the covers of the book is a nebula, and it's a turquoise. And it's just nebulas seem to me always they're very beautiful. I used to have one on my site on my planet Stars. I chose a nebula. I even contacted NASA to make sure I could use it. And they said, well, so long as you're not going to make money off it, they answered me. So long as you're not going to make money off of it, you can use anything that we have. You can't print it on cups. You can't sell it on shirts, T-shirts. I said, no, I just want it on my website, and I got their approval. So that's a little word to the wise that, you know, they're not all that. I mean, but go to NASA. You'll see a lot of nebulas there. But that is my favorite right there, David, the undying stars. That's it. And they are undying. So listen to this. Now, okay, everybody, thank you. We'll be on next week, of course, same time, same station. And we'll have another guest. I've got some real – they're lining up. I'm into January. Actually, I'm into February. I take that back. I'm not that all in demand, but the authors and the publicists that they have, just all I have to do is ask, oh, I want to have this one, like I asked for you, David. I asked your publicist if I maybe could interview you, and Lindsay said, of course, I'll see what I can do, and here we are. Anyways,
thanks so much,
have a good
Natalie.
Week.
I really appreciate it.
Oh, and you will come back. You have to come back. And I may even write to you and get something for you for my next issue of my magazine. It'll be in January. I will write to you about that. Anyways, enjoy the week, everybody. I'll see you next week, 8 to 9 p.m. And as always, I always end the show. End the show the same way. Believe in things you cannot see because they really are there. Good night. Good night, David. Thank you again so much.
Thank you, Natalie. It was wonderful.
Okay. Bye-bye.